episode of Routes Through Pokemon Adventures. I'm Ruby.
And I'm Shea Locke.
And together we are a father-daughter duo going through the mainline series of Pokemon games. We are also going through the Pokemon anime and the Pokemon Adventures manga. Today we will be covering 6 episodes of the anime and a special.
That was originally put out in 3 parts, so it's almost like 3 episodes, but it all tells one story, and they call it a movie when you watch it together now, so.
And we will also be covering the first chapter of the Pokemon Adventures manga, Volume 12. But before we get into that, let's catch up on what we've been doing. So what have you been up to?
Work. In Pokemon Go, there's been some new stuff that's been coming out, like Gossifleur is now out there in the wild, which is fun. Completing a bunch of different tasks. And it's been a little bit extra fun because I did go to the Mall of America the other day with Serenity Sola, and we did some Pokemon Go there, as well as, you know, just hang out, go to escape rooms and stuff, which was fun. But yeah, so I got to accomplish a lot of my tasks, which was nice. And I like when new Pokemon come to the game, so that's always fun. There's been a few new ones lately with, I think, Sizzlipede and then Gossifleur and then the Paldean Tauros. Not that that one counts as a new Pokemon, but... And there's a hatch timed research thing I got going on, too, so I'm trying to hatch a ton of eggs constantly. Because they all need to be... Like, a bunch of different Pokemon need to be hatched. So besides that, after we beat, you know, Price at the Ice Gym and took care of the Goldenrod Radio Tower, I decided to do a lot of breeding and trying to hatch a ton of eggs in the game. And so I was breeding my shiny Gyarados with an Ekans and getting lots of Ekans looking for a shiny one. And I think I've hatched like 20-some Ekans now and still nothing. A lot of walking around.
You should give one to me. I'm sure I'll hatch it in the first egg.
Yeah, that's a good point. I should do that. But yeah, I think that's what I've been up to. You have anything interesting going on?
I'm babysitting later.
Kind of late in the night, too.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't had to do that one yet.
Mm-mm.
But we want to get a little ahead on some of our recordings, too, because we do have a vacation coming up in a month.
Mm-hmm. That'll be fun.
Yeah. But I need them. I need enough recorded and edited so that there's not a break in there while we're on vacation. Plus, just getting all prepared for the summer. Yeah, we're going to go see the ocean. Yeah. But yeah, also just getting prepared for the summer break, too. And I want episodes recorded that lead up into the break, and then hopefully a couple before that come in after the break, so we're not rushing at the end either. So that we get a little summer break, since you have, well, your job might be increasing, and you also have summer school stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And other volunteer things that you're doing over the summer.
Well, now that we've caught up, let's jump into the anime. Episode 227, or Season 5, Episode 16, Bulbasaur the Ambassador, or... Sayonara Fushigidane Okido Tei no Boken, or Farewell Fushigidane Adventure at Dr. Okido's. Wait, the one has 3 exclamation points and the other one only has 1. The Japanese titles.
Yeah, I don't know why the Japanese thing just has... They probably forgot to put it in there. Typo on their fault, not ours. But yeah, Fushigidane is Bulbasaur's name in Japan. It means like mystery seed or something like that. And then he evolves into mystery grass and then mystery flower or something like that.
Nice.
All right, so Ash and Co. are headed for Ecruteak, but they almost get run over by milk cans. The driver of the truck that they fell out of appreciates the gang's help in getting them picked back up, and so then he offers them a ride. So he takes them to a blimp and says that it will be able to drop them all the way off at Moo Moo Farm, which is supposedly right next to Ecruteak, when in the game it's really just kind of the halfway point between Olivine and Ecruteak. It's like, it's just as far, either way. Still, it would be a flight halfway to their destination, which is not bad. But I also think this is great because, just like they flew to Olivine after finishing Whirl Islands, they are now flying to Ecruteak. So flying is happening a lot after they finished Cyanwood.
Yeah.
Because that's where we get fly. So while waiting for the guy, Carter, to get the tickets, Ash puts a call into Professor Oak and is greeted by Mr. Mime and Ash's mom at Oak's place. Hmm. Delia explains there has been some trouble in the gardens at Professor Oak's place, and so then Tracy, who actually has lines this time and is not just appearing on the screen, with Oak, pop into the screen. Apparently, a feud erupted in the gardens with many of the wild Pokemon. So Oak and Tracy, knowing Bulbasaur used to help protect and take care of Pokemon, so some more continuity stuff from his past, might be able to help defuse the situation. Bulbasaur agrees, and I began to think that this was it. Ash was finally going to lose his last Kanto starter Pokemon. Because Charizard's already gone, Squirtle's already gone. And when he didn't trade for Bulbasaur, like he usually gets another Pokemon back when he sends a Pokemon in, that just made it more certain to me that he was just leaving a hole in his groups to catch more Pokemon later. So then the gang board the blimp, and Team Rocket is spying on this whole thing and sneaks on board in the cargo area. It's apparently very warm in that section, though, and then they find a walk-in cooler that they decide to walk into, and the door shuts and locks on its own.
They kind of did that to themselves.
Yep. Then back in the gardens, Oak, Tracy, and Bulbasaur are walking along, and then Heracross comes flying in and immediately goes to slurping pollen out of Bulbasaur, just like he used to do.
That was funny.
I was so happy to see that again. Of course, Bulbasaur is very angry and whips him away. Then they arrive where the feud is happening, and Bulbasaur tries to get different members of the three factions to get along. He keeps getting smacked around for his efforts, gets angry after a while, and hits the three he was trying to work with, which are all from different groups, and so all the Pokemon start attacking and piling on Bulbasaur. Tracy sends his pals Scyther, Meryl, and Venonat, but then Bulbasaur solar beams, and that stops the fighting for a bit as all the Pokemon are awed. The Pokemon were starting to get along, but then they started getting angry again. Oak decides that maybe they need to build another lake in the gardens because there are just too many Pokemon gathering at the specific one where the fighting is constantly happening. Back in the blimp, Team Rocket is freezing to death, but it still doesn't stop their rhyming. Like one says, I think Jesse's like, I can't feel my nose. I can't feel my toes. I wish I'd worn clothes. The blip gets the gang to Moo Moo Farm, and Carter leaves them there and takes off in his truck. And I had to wonder, did he take the truck on the blimp with him then? Maybe it was carried in the cargo area? I don't know.
Yes.
Maybe just as a truck parked at both places. I don't know.
Oh, that's quite possible.
So then Team Rocket finally break out of the freezer while trapped in blocks of ice. The blimp lifts off again after the gang's already gone, so they're still on the blimp. And so then they fall out of the cargo area, and they are off again as Team Rocket is on thin ice. Crash into the woods with an entertaining exit.
Oh.
So yeah, Team Rocket was dealt with really quickly and had their own little adventure because Ash and them are hardly in the story too, because this is mostly about Bulbasaur dealing with the Pokemon at Oak's place.
Yep.
And so then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon's glare technique is paralyzing. Ruby!
What?
That's the Pokemon.
Me?
Yeah.
I don't glare.
We talked about your glare attack a few times in the past on this show.
We've never.
Rosella was in it, so she knows. Well, she probably doesn't remember, actually. In the garden, Meryl senses an underground spring, and so Bulbasaur calls all the grass Pokemon the lake is meant for, and they all start digging. But when they hit hard ground, Bulbasaur gets some Sandslash and Water Pokemon to help. Water softens the ground, and Sandslash digs. Things go well with the dig, but then they find a giant rock buried in there. So Bulbasaur uses Vine Whip, and all the other Pokemon help him pull the rock free. They get it out. But then, when the water is finally found, the rock falls back down into the pit and almost kills an Oddish. And Bulbasaur gets in the way and saves the little Oddish, and then everything goes black and white, and everyone is shocked, and bam! We get a memorial montage with sad music for Bulbasaur.
I thought for a second it was going to be actually to be continued after the episode, but yeah, they did a sad thing. I was like, no, Bulbasaur is dead!
Yeah, they show us his greatest hits. And we all miss him. He died a hero.
Yep.
Farewell, Fushigidane. The rock is pushed off, and no one can find the body. But then he pops up out of the ground, having dug in to survive the rock. It was such an interesting thing, because they really pushed hard for this death thing to have happened with the montage and everything.
We didn't believe it for a second, though.
No, we did not. Another phone call with the gang reveals the new lake helped, but as soon as Bulbasaur wasn't around, things got bad again. And so Bulbasaur plans to stay behind, and Ash lets him go. So now Ash is finished with his three starters, and he has room to catch new Pokemon for his team. Now, it's still in Oak's possession, so it still belongs to Ash, so it's not a gotta lose them all, because he still has it. It's just not with him. Mm-hmm. But we'll see if he ever uses him again.
Who's that Pokemon? It's not me. It's Arbok!
It is you.
Wait, you said I was an Ekans.
Well, that's true. Well, you've evolved now.
Tallies. Off again. One. Team Rocket's on thin ice. Entertaining exit. One. When they fell off and said, Team Rocket's on thin ice.
And crashed in the woods.
Yep. And that's
Lost
it.
Lost in the woods.
Yes. I'm rubbing off on him. All right. Now let's rank it.
All right. So... Bulbasaur the Ambassador. I mean, it was a fun episode, and the quote-unquote death scene was amusing. But it's not the highest, probably. I love Bulbasaur, but I also don't like seeing him leave.
Yeah, but Heracross sipping sap again was fun.
Heracross doing his thing was hilarious. That's true. And also Team Rocket's little excursion where they just got a ride, basically, but didn't interact with anybody. It was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking I might want to put it above A Promise is a Promise and under Nerves of Steelix.
That looks like a good spot. All right, now let's move on to episode 228, or season 5, episode 17. Espeon not included, or Effie to Sakura, Andrew Shitai Futatabi, or Effie and Sakura, Andrew City once again.
All right. Well, we've met Sakura before, so Effie must be Espeon's name.
This episode.
And Enju City is Ekritik for us.
Mm. And it had 3 exclamation points, so that's always good.
Yeah, it's keeping it up ever since the Silver arc, the Lugia arc of 3 episodes where they stopped doing it, but the episodes before it and now the episodes after it are all back.
I don't know, last episode was a little sketchy.
So the gang make it back to Ekritik City. Not long after they do, an Espeon, so Eeveelution, rushes up to the gang, and following behind is a rockin' reunion with Sakura, the youngest of the Kimono sisters. We follow that up with another rockin' reunion with Sakura's sisters, and they all just count as one.
Yep.
Because Sakura is kind of her own person, where the others are just, they're always together.
Uh-huh.
The sisters are off to visit with a dance instructor.
Three of them are.
Hmm?
It sounded like all 4 were off too, but only the...
There's five sisters.
Oh.
So 4 sisters are off.
Yes. Sakura is not going.
Right. Sakura is hanging out with the gang. In fact, Sakura is going to train Espeon in a battle with Misty and her Corsola. The sisters meet the dance instructors and their Team Rocket in disguise. And these are actually pretty decent disguises this time around. Like, they hide their hair pretty good.
Yeah, their hair is their biggest giveaway to me.
Yep. Anyway, it's interesting that they decide to have better disguises when they're dealing with people who don't see them very often. And they don't even try all that hard with Ash and Co, who see them all the time.
Well, they don't have to try hard with Ash and Co because they know that they won't realize them.
Right.
But everyone else, they're smart.
Anyway, they have a specific form of dancing with their Pokemon, and so they call in Arbok and Victory Bell for the class, and we get a distracted Pokemon as Victory Bell decides to eat James. We get another shot of the Misty Sakura battle and get to see Espeon in action, which was really fun. I liked that. Back at the dance class, Jesse and James have the sisters bring out their 4 Eeveelutions to learn with, and during their practicing, it was cool to see their Pokemon represented by the sisters' fans. Like the fans that they use for their dancing?
Yeah.
There's markings on it that relate to the Pokemon.
And some of their clothes actually represents their Pokemon.
Yeah.
One of them is a little weird, but the rest do.
I particularly liked the white with the splitting lightning bolt for Jolteon's trainer. Like, her fan was just really unique and cool, I thought.
Yeah.
Jesse and James say the Pokemon need work, and so they're going to take them into the back for private tutoring. But, of course, it's just a trap, and the evolutions are dropped into a cage. The sisters catch on and go back, just in time to see Team Rocket lift off in their balloon. And it was actually really funny, because they went back into, like, a room with sliding doors or whatever, and that's where the hole was for the evolutions to drop into. But when the sisters go back there, that they open that door, or they get to that doorway or whatever, and, like, Meowth's face suddenly just starts, like, inflating in front of them, filling it up, because the balloon was inflating and coming up. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of a funny shot.
Yeah.
One of the girls asks who they are, and they answer with an interesting intro.
Prepare for trouble, you'll soon hear our name.
And then make it double, so you'll know who to blame. Back to the battle with Espeon and Corsola, Espeon is defeated. Misty talks to Sakura about their adventures in the Whirl Islands, and Sakura wishes again that she could go on an adventure, but she still has her sisters not letting her. Then those sisters show up and let everyone know their Pokemon have been stolen. And that's where we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon eats its opponent's dreams.
Ooh, drowsy.
Yep.
Yes.
Jesse is upset to find out that they are missing an evolution. They don't have the full set. And so she is not satisfied. So, of course, Team Rocket would have gotten away with the others if Jesse wasn't determined to get them all. Gotta catch them all. The sisters had overheard Team Rocket want all the evolutions, and so they all planned to use Espeon as bait, which Espeon herself suggested. So Sakura and Misty go to make the plan, and Brock flirts with one of the sisters, leaving Ash to fill in for Misty with an ear-pulling moment of babysitting Brock. Team Rocket find Espeon sleeping under a tree, all alone. So they go in for the capture, and Ash and Co. and all the sisters are hiding in the bushes.
There, in the bushes.
They all let Espeon get captured, and Crobat follows the balloon, and everyone follows Crobat. Once they arrive, a battle ensues, and we get a second distracted Pokemon with Victory Bell chasing James down. The sisters get to see that Espeon and Sakura have gotten a lot stronger as they team up with Misty and Corsola to battle Team Rocket. Then Pikachu gives them a Thunderbolt, and Team Rocket is blasting off again!
Ding. Ding!
Pokemon are returned. Sakura is allowed to go on her own adventure, and she chooses not to go with Ash and Co., as she has to go alone a bit first.
Who's that Pokemon? It's Drowsy, still.
Still.
And our tallies are 5 Eeveelutions, 2 Rockin' Reunions, 2 distracted Pokemon, 1 interesting intro, and 1 babysitting Brock. Now let's rank it. Of course, I loved all the evolutions.
Absolutely.
And the Rockin' Reunion.
For sure.
Oh, this is a tough one. All right. I really liked it.
I really enjoyed seeing Espeon in action. Like, there was some cool moments during the 2 fight scenes it was in. And the fans and kimonos were cool, too. Especially that Jolteon fan.
If this is too high for you, we can put it down lower. But what do you think of maybe putting it above Dueling Heroes? Or is that too good?
I really liked the 2 episodes where they were finishing up the World Cup.
Okay, so maybe right above Around the Whirlpool?
I think I'd be okay with that.
All right. Under the Perfect Match, above Around the Whirlpool. All right, time for episode 229, or season 5, episode 18. For Ho-Oh the Bells Toll, or Suicune to Minaki Ho-No-Densetsu.
Densetsu.
Densetsu.
And I actually recognize that word a lot because Saiken no Densetsu or something like that is the Secret of Mana series. So Legend of Mana series. Well, I'm guessing Densetsu is Legend.
Or Suicune and Minaki. The Legend of Ho-Oh. And they had 3 exclamation points.
Yep. So I'm guessing Ho-Oh is Ho-Oh.
No, I don't think so.
What's interesting here is that for Ho-Oh the Bells Toll doesn't mention Suicune, but we have Suicune spelled different than how we spell it for the English games, but it's still Suicune. All right, so the gang are planning their route to Mahogany Town when bells start ringing through Ecruteak. So we're still in Ecruteak City again. Nurse Joy mentions it's coming from Tin Tower, and then we cut to the Ecruteak Gym, where we have a character who will be a rockin' reunion in this episode. He just hasn't reunited yet. It's Morty! He says the bells can only mean Ho-Oh will soon return. But then we get someone saying that it might mean Suicune will return instead. And this mystery person is Yusine, our mystical man from Pokemon Crystal, and who is trying to track down Suicune in the manga. Actually, I think he's trying to track down Suicune in the games, too. But Joy explains to the gang that the bells don't ring even in the strongest winds, and legend says they only ring when Ho-Oh will return. Inside the tower, Morty and Yusine are checking every floor and find every bell ringing, and on the 9th floor are the special crystal bells. But when they check on them, they find all 4 crystal bells are missing, and they assume the other bells were ringing as an alert. So Morty sends Gengar to find the missing bells. Team Rocket are in the woods, admiring the crystal bells that they stole. And then we get a modified motto.
With crystal bells in hand,
we'll ring across the land.
And then when Ho-Oh reappears,
we will quickly switch gears.
Because together we will show
that we can beat old Ho-Oh.
Jesse!
James.
Team Rocket ringing at the speed of light.
Our crystal bells pack a mighty fight, fight, fight. Wah, ba-fat! It turns out they want to use the bells to summon Ho-Oh so they can catch it. But when they shake the bells, there is no sound. So Jesse takes over all 4 of them and tries way too hard by swinging them together in a circle and loses grip on one, which flies off and smashes into pieces on a rock. The bells in the tower all stop ringing, and a wind blows through the forest. The gang finally connect with Morty and Yusine, who doesn't seem to like the gang. Very cranky about them. Then we get a legend from Morty about the burned and tin tower. When the fire burned up the tower of Ho-Oh, it left a bunch of bells, including the 4 crystal bells, untouched. So they were used in the rebuilt tower, the tin tower. Because remember, in the anime, we find the Tin Tower is just a copy of the old tower.
Yep.
But they left the old tower in respect. The bells never rang again, until now. Yusine claims that Ho-Oh is angry with humans and will only be at peace when humans and Pokemon hearts are one. He was angry because humans tried to steal its power, which caused the fire that burned down the tower. 3 Pokemon died in the fire, unable to escape in time, and so Ho-Oh created new lives for these 3 Pokemon, and he sent them to observe the humans, watching to see when they can live together in harmony with Pokemon. These are Zapdos, Moltres, no, what? Just kidding. These are Suicune, Entei, and Raikou, of course. Then Ash remembers another movie and says he met Suicune.
Yes.
One could say he's referencing the first Johto episode, because Suicune shows up there, too. Mm-hmm. But he never actually met the Pokemon in that one. He just saw it, and then it was gone. Where he met Pokemon in the Celebi movie. So, I'm definitely taking it that they're probably basing that information off the movie. Mm-hmm. Yusine won't believe it, that he's met him, and so he wants to battle Ash. Meanwhile, Team Rocket is surrounded by a ton of Pokemon who are all angry about the breaking of a bell. Then they web them all up. Before the battle between Ash and Yusine can take place, a kid comes in and explains that the tower has been taken over by Pokemon, and many of them are bug types, which Misty is thrilled about. Turns out the whole town is covered in webs, and apparently legend also says the crystal bells being taken disrupts the balance between Pokemon and people, and so the wild Pokemon are now aggressive toward humans. Ash declares they're going to do something about it. And then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon has short feet with suction cups. Gengar found the bells, and the gang all end up in the woods. They find Team Rocket cocooned and hanging from a tree. Morty goes for the bells, but the Pokemon protect them. The gang learn that one of the bells got smashed, which is making it difficult to have the Pokemon trust them. And things aren't going well, and Ash almost gets hit, but then Suicune arrives, protecting him. Its power dissolves a lot of the webbing in the forest. Team Rocket then decide they're going to try and catch Suicune, and instead they are blasted off again! Ding! Then Yusin decides he is going to try and capture Suicune, as he's longed to do. He quickly loses the battle, and Suicune is gone. I think Suicune even makes his Pokemon return to its ball, which was crazy. And then all the webs in town dissolve, and the bells are returned. Well, the intact ones, at least. Pokemon leave town, and everything is balanced once again.
And our Who's That Pokemon? Perfect for the episode, it's Caterpie. Because Caterpie was also webbing up things.
Yep.
And Tallies, Rockin' Reunion, and Modified Motto. Let's rank it.
For Ho-Oh the Bells Toll. It was cool to get a lot of legend and stuff. I think I might want to put this just above... I don't know, do you think it goes above or below Nerves of Steelix?
Honestly, I ranked it myself in my own mind, and I was putting it right above it.
Right above Nerves of Steelix?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Well, let's put it right there, then.
I feel like that's just the right spot to put it, but let's see where he ranks it. Yeah, I'd already ranked it in my own mind, and it was right there.
Well, it's nice that we're kind of in the same ballpark on that one. So yeah, I think it is our current number 8 out of 19.
Now, episode 230, or season 5, episode 19, Extreme Pokemon, or Pokemon Rayo de Tsubushire, or Run Quickly Along the Pokemon Ride. Wait. Dang it, only 2 exclamation points.
Ooh, bummer.
They are sucking.
No, they were doing great.
They didn't break the record of 10, though.
But this is what? Oh, I see. But this is only one sentence, so it's not too surprising we didn't get 3. Okay, so the gang are about to reach the town of Exeter when suddenly someone pulled by an Arcanine rides a skateboard right by the group, and we have a recurring rival, as it turns out to be Gary. And the interaction with Ash and Gary is actually very civil.
Yeah.
Seems like the boys might have matured a bit. Mm-hmm. So Ash wants to battle the Arcanine, but Gary says he can't because he needs Arcanine in good shape for a race that's about to take place in town where people are pulled by their Pokemon. They then see a lot of people training with their Pokemon, and Misty thinks it looks dangerous, and Ash says something really intelligent. He sees that the race is more dangerous for the Pokemon than the trainers. Okay, I'm kidding. It's not intelligent. This is actually really stupid. First, how can you say something like that when battling Pokemon is clearly more dangerous for Pokemon than it is for the trainers? And Ash engages that all the time. In fact, he wanted to do it just a minute ago. Because it is much more dangerous for the Pokemon, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Second of all, running and flying, which these Pokemon are doing, because like Scyther tries to fly while pulling some people and others are running. That's a natural thing for Pokemon to do. They're not doing anything weird, so it's not extra dangerous for them. It's dangerous for the people holding onto a rope and standing on a skateboard. It is clearly much more dangerous for the trainers than it is the Pokemon.
Honestly, the three of them should get skateboards because that would make their travels much faster.
True. But then the show would struggle because they would get from point A to point B too quickly, and they wouldn't be able to have filler episodes.
Of course not.
We wouldn't have any more Lost in the Woods. So anyway, yeah, Ash's perspective on this is a really bad take. And later on, Ash can't even eat when they're at the restaurant because he's so worried about the Pokemon. I mean, Arcanine had a collar on. That was what he said. He's like, he had a collar on, but Arcanine didn't care.
Yeah, I remember him being really stupid about it.
And then while he's saying this in the place, a guy shows up, explains that it's a sport called Extreme Pokemon. In ancient times, riding Pokemon was a necessity, and now it's remembered with the race. And when they talk about how people from all over watch it, and Misty wonders if Gary will win, suddenly Ash pops up and is like, I'm going to enter.
That's so stupid.
As soon as Gary could possibly be winning this competition, he's like, no, wait. it's fine, and I gotta do it. However, he doesn't have the proper equipment. But this guy's like, hey, I have some old equipment, and his name is Shelby. And he runs a Pokemon daycare. And he offers to let Ash use his equipment that he has. And then he explains daycares, and how there are a lot of them in Exeter. And
Exeter.
It is Exeter, yep. So hatching Pokemon is a big deal in town, and is also actually part of the race. They don't actually get a real egg when they're doing the race, but they have to get a dummy egg. They race to the dummy egg and bring it back to the finish line. So Ash starts practicing, and then we learn that he used to ride a plank of wood down hills, apparently, and it was called, like, mountain boarding or something. I don't know. So we got a boarder in the anime, now that we already had one in the video game.
Nice. Also, like, he devoted, like, all his time to Pokemon, so very doubtful about this, but that's okay.
Sure. Now, the fact that he did some mountain boarding, that at least explains how he could be better prepared for the race and actually ride a skateboard, but it does not explain how his Pokemon can be ready and trained in a day to be able to do okay in this race.
I think he should lose, but of course he's not going to lose. He's probably going to get first place.
But I also had to think that if he was used to riding a plank of wood down a grassy hill, not snowed-covered hill, mind you, that maybe this skill set is what allowed him to ride cardboard boxes down a rocky mountain in that Swinub episode.
Okay, other people also did it, but yes, that makes a little...
Maybe because it was a favorite pastime of his. He engaged in it on occasion with his companions, and so they got used to it too.
Yeah. Yep. That's what
Except
happened.
For Todd, I guess.
Well, isn't Todd the one who crashed?
He might have been.
Still, I don't know how the cardboard didn't tear, but they balanced their weight evenly enough and it didn't
There's
tear.
A skill set involved to make sure it doesn't tear somehow.
And the reason Todd's didn't tear is because it was very tough and it would have torn soon, but he crashed.
Right. That's gotta be it. So while practicing, Ash crashes and is rescued by Gary and Arcanine. Both boys are cocky about winning, but it seems like a friendly rivalry now. Not like, oh, I'm going to beat you. Like you suck and I can't let you win. It's more of like, I'm going to be better than you. It's just a fun rivalry thing. Mm-hmm. Ash learns he can only bring one Pokemon, and so he chooses Bayleaf, which doesn't seem like a good option. And I don't see Bayleaf being a fast-looking Pokemon, and Growlithe is actually, or Arcanine is supposed to be really fast, so I don't see anything beating it, but... We'll see.
So stupid. He should lose.
While Ash is training with Bayleaf, Meowth is spying on him. They figure out about the race and realize there will be plenty of fast and strong Pokemon for them to catch, but they'll only steal one this time, the first place winner. So they're not being too greedy so they can get away with it. And so then we get into some more training and we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon can make a clone of itself. You might even say... A twin.
Can't, like, all Pokemon do that with,
Double team? Kinda. Now it's time for the actual race. And right at the start, one competitor fumbles and causes a pileup with a bunch of others. Ash and Gary are a couple of the ones that make it through unscathed, and soon they are the two in the lead. How is Ash in the lead? I don't know, but whatever. So despite what Team Rocket said about catching the first place winner... They decided to just catch Arcanine in the middle of the thing because he's in the lead at the moment. Which isn't the first place winner, then.
It'll probably be the first place winner, though, and I think it actually makes sense.
It does, it's just the way they described it earlier, I'm like, I thought you were just going to wait at the end with, like, a trap for the one who gets the prize, you know?
Oh, that makes sense.
Anyway. I mean, he's a fast runner, it's a good Pokemon to catch, so that's fine. And so, yeah, they just snag Arcanine with a net because he's currently in the lead, and Team Rocket races in with an interesting intro.
Prepare for trouble, up, up, and away!
Make it double. It's not a cliché. Oh. Ash chases them down and has Bayleaf rush him forward until he launches into the air on his skateboard, and then his skateboard and him land on the balloon, the skateboard popping it, and Arcanine is freed. Team Rocket is blasting, and then the balloon crashes at the egg collection station. So then Team Rocket decide to steal a ton of eggs instead, and a battle ensues, and Gary joins in when he catches up. The baskets are saved, and Arcanine flame wheels Team Rocket, and they go flying off again, saying, "We put all our eggs in one basket again!" Ding. Ding. Then Ash and Gary get their eggs and continue the race before the rest of the racers catch up. And though it should not have happened at all, Ash wins this race. Just barely beating out Gary.
Yeah, it was barely, but like, Gary should have won.
Yes.
This is so stupid.
I was talking to Flame about this, and he's like, yeah, but didn't, I think it was Flame I was talking to, and he's like, but yeah, didn't Ash use like a little shortcut jump or whatever? And I'm like, he did, but all that did was catch him up to where Gary was, because he was behind, and so then they were neck and neck. And when they were neck and neck, our canine should have won.
Yeah. Super stupid. Gary's not too sour about it, at least.
No, they part on really good company, actually. And Ash gets a reward for protecting the eggs from Team Rocket, as well as getting the first place award. And the thing he gets for protecting the eggs is a blue Pokemon egg. And, like, we see a lot of eggs in this episode, and most of them resembling the Pokemon they'll hatch into, like the little black zigzag on a yellow egg for Elekid and stuff like that. And the last time they had an egg that was going to hatch, it was for a Pokemon from the next generation, a baby Pokemon from the next generation. So I was thinking that this blue egg had to be a baby Pokemon from the next generation that was blue. And so I assumed it was going to hatch into Azurill, the baby form of Meryl. And we'll see if I was right. But either way, I knew I was right about Bulbasaur leaving the group to make room for another Pokemon for Ash. I told you it was going to happen.
Oh, there's a Pokeball on top of the incubator so that he can catch it.
Oh, yeah. This egg is actually sitting in an incubator, too, unlike the other one.
Who's that Pokemon? It's Mr. Mime.
Mr. Mime! Do you get my joke about the twin now?
Oh.
Does Ash have a twin?
What, did you birth two Mr. Mimes? Tallies, recurring rival, interesting intro, and off again. Let's rank it. I thought it was decent. I hate that Ash won.
Yeah, it was really dumb that he won, especially since we don't really pay attention to that prize, right? He gets a prize for saving the eggs, which is all he really needed. He could have lost and then got that prize still, you know?
Yeah. What was throwing in the Noctowl?
You didn't like that episode very much. It was the plain one.
I'm thinking maybe right above it. What do you think?
Under a parent trapped?
Yeah,
it seems fine.
Okay, that's where we'll put it then.
I mean, I did enjoy the fact that Gary and Ash got along, and the race was kind of fun.
Yes,
it just was dumb that Ash won, and Ash's earlier comments were really stupid.
Yeah.
And so that puts us at number 13 out of 20, I believe.
Okay, now let's go on to episode 231, or season 5, episode 20, an egg sighting adventure, or Me Tante Junsa Kita Tamago no Nazo. Or Famous Detective Junsar, the mystery of the disappearing egg.
The disappeared egg.
The disappeared egg. Oh, gosh. I remember this one.
Yeah, so Junsar must be Officer Jenny.
Yeah, but this Officer Jenny, well, she's got some interesting quirks.
That's for sure. All right, so Ash is actually allowed to carry his egg this time. And as we mentioned, it sits in a sort of incubator. Team Rocket spy from the bushes and they want to steal the egg, of course.
There, in the bushes!
A storm rolls in and Pikachu is thrilled. A lightning bolt crashes down in some nearby trees and so the gang flee toward a nearby Pokemon Center. Then we get a weird thing where we cut to Team Rocket, obviously having been hit by the lightning, and there's a large silver machine with an R on it destroyed with the tree. And it looks a lot like a robot from a movie I've seen before. But it's extra huge, like somebody would have to sit in it to control it kind of thing. And it doesn't look like it's part of their balloon, like they like to have contraptions on. So I think we have another busted bot here, despite that they never use it and we never get a better look at it.
I think I agreed with that.
I think you were the one who pointed it out. I had to watch it a second time. Brock immediately starts flirting with Nurse Joy when they're inside the Pokemon Center, and Misty is babysitting Brock again. The gang are shown to a room and go to sleep. Meowth picks locks, and Team Rocket sneaks into the room. For some reason, they put Meowth at the end of a fishing line, as they go to get the egg, but they all walk into the room, so it's not like they tossed him in there and then we're gonna reel him back or anything. Like, it makes no sense at all.
It was completely idiotic, like most of the episode will be. Although, the rest of the episode is also kind of funny.
Even this was funny to me, it just didn't make any sense.
Like, yeah.
As they get close, Team Rocket gets into an argument, and Togepi wakes up and starts waving its hands back and forth. That's right, metronome. And its most common thing it seems to use, teleport, is what happens again, which sends the egg into the woods.
Lost in the woods!
So Team Rocket, finding it missing, sneak quickly back out of the room, and Meowth relocks the door on the way through. So instead, Team Rocket head to the kitchen and just start feasting. However, on the way there, they end up face-planting on the floor. They trip over Wobbuffet or something.
Yeah, they do.
This episode is so ridiculous. Anyway, so in the forest, the baby part of a Kangaskhan, I'm not sure if you would call it a baby Kangaskhan or not, finds the egg and knocks it out of the incubator by accident. So the parent portion of the Pokemon collects the baby part and the egg, putting them both in its pouch. Ash has a weird dream and wakes up and finds the egg missing.
Yep.
Team Rocket is still eating and take off in the morning when they hear sirens. Officer Jenny arrives, and this one doubles as a detective, apparently. And Misty goes babysitting Brock again when he flirts with Jenny. This Jenny is nuts.
She's crazy!
And she keeps trying to take credit for everyone else's ideas, except when she comes up with her own, which are really, really bad conclusions.
She just, like, jumps. And then she'll be like, I was about to say that when someone else says something.
Yup. Of course, Brock supports each one of her claims, which hilarious when he realizes that he must be the thief because she has jumped to that conclusion at some point.
Yeah, she jumps to the conclusion and he's like, wait, but I couldn't have. Wait, maybe I did. It's true.
Yeah.
I didn't steal the egg.
It's so funny and dumb.
And everyone else, like, believes her half the time. It's like, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if everybody does. Ash and Misty don't seem to be on board.
Well, one of the, like, they believe parts of it. Like, when she accuses Brock and she's like, well, Misty has Togepi and gets to carry her around and Ash has the egg. And so Brock got jealous and stole the egg because he wanted a partner too.
Well, and that's because that, like, at least starts with an idea that could make sense. but then it stops making sense really, very quickly.
And then Misty's like, I didn't know you felt that way, Brock. Right. It's like, stupid.
Well, she's a person of authority, so it's like, well, maybe she knows what she's doing, but I think they quickly start to realize that that's not true.
But except at the end, they believe her story, too.
I don't remember that, but we can get there later. Mm-hmm. Growlithe sniffs around to figure out where the egg must be. He sniffs Ash, and so they go off to leave to find where Growlithe leads them. So since they all left the building, Team Rocket sneaks back in to eat more food. And around somewhere around here, we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon helps Nurse Joy in the Pokemon Center.
Oh.
Jenny finds footprints in Ash's room when they come back, and after accusing Brock, it eventually moves to... Well, I think Misty gets accused at one point, too. But Ash or maybe she was the first one that got accused. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But eventually we get to Ash, because they decide that Vine Whip could have gotten into it, because the footprints didn't get all the way to the table.
Yeah, because she used, like, some sort of, like, spore thing that, like...
From Jumpluff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so she, like, knocked everyone on their back as she magnified their boots.
Yeah, she was using a magnifying glass on them.
And so, like, yeah, the footprints didn't go all the way to the thing, so they're like, that could only mean Vine Whip was used.
Which means, like, it could have been a lot of things, but if we go with Vine Whip, that's fine. And then Ash is like, well, I'm the only one with something with Vine Whip. And so they're like, oh, it must have been you! And it's like, you are the victim! Like, what?
Yeah, it was like... Well, Bayleaf uses Vine Whip, and he's like, wait, I have a Bayleaf. Like,
yeah.
Other Pokemon can use Vine Whip too, you know.
He used to have a Bulbasaur that used it all the time.
Ugh.
And what's crazy here is, like, earlier on, she decided it couldn't be Ash because he's the victim.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly it has to be him because he has somebody with Vine Whip.
Uh-huh. And then they eventually get over that fact and go outside there, and there's Team Rocket's...
No, not yet. So first they, so after all that, they find the footprints of Team... Well, they find footprints leading off to the kitchen, and so they follow those. And then I think Ash and Misty see the faces of Team Rocket imprinted on the floor.
Like the hair and everything! It's like, what? And when do they find the scratch marks on the doors?
That was when they first exited the room. She's like, oh yeah, Brock was smart to put the scratch marks there to make it seem like somebody broke in. But then Joy's like, actually, there's scratch marks on the one outside, too. So anyway, they finally track down Team Rocket. And they can't get through the kitchen door because they are all piled against it to block it. And so then they decide they're all going to, like, Jenny and Ash and everybody are going to slam into it, causing... But then, of course, Team Rocket lets it go in. So they all fall into the kitchen. And Team Rocket exit. And James has an amusing line. He's like, thanks for dropping. Bye. Because he says bye as in, like, goodbye. So he's, but it was right after saying thanks for dropping because they fell. Which all together makes it sound like thanks for dropping by.
Yep.
And I thought that was hilarious. Clever, clever. Ash and everyone chase them into the forest. And when they see the... And then, when they're out there, they actually end up finding out Team Rocket doesn't have it, and they find Kangaskhan with the egg in its pouch. After a sniff test, the egg is given back to Ash, and so then Team Rocket steals it right away, with a mechanical arm, and they crack open an interesting intro.
Crack open. I noticed your last one too, but this one's kind of funny. Prepare for trouble! We're lending a hand!
Make it double, and hear this command. And then it's battle time with the distracted Pokemon Victory Bell. Kangaskhan joins in the battle, then Pikachu zaps Team Rocket's balloon, and they explode, flying off again, simply saying, not again!
Ding! Ding!
Before they all leave, Brock flirts with Jenny again, and Misty drags him off by his ear, babysitting Brock a third time this episode.
Oh, and then at the end, Officer Jenny comes up with this other crazy thing that did not happen with how Kangaskhan got the egg.
Oh, yeah, how Team Rocket must have had it and got it out there, and yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, like, she was so brave and fought for it and stuff, the Kangaskhan was.
Yep, I remember that.
And Ash and Co are like, oh, thank you, Kangaskhan, you're so brave. It's like, you believe this story? What? Well... Who's that Pokemon? It's Blissey. Tallies are Busted Bot. 3 Babysitting Brock. Interesting intro. Distracted Pokemon. And off again. Now let's rank it.
Okay. Definitely a stupid episode, but it was also hilarious.
Yeah, it was.
I think I'm going right underneath Bulbasaur. So right above A Promise is a Promise.
Oh.
Is that good with you or is it?
Sure.
Okay.
All right, now, episode 232, or season 5, episode 21, Hatching a Plan, or Tamago Kailu, or Egg Hatch.
Interesting title. Egg Hatch.
No, it's Egg Hatch, because there's no exclamation points.
Yeah.
So, Tamago is egg, and Kailu is hatch.
It must be. Because I know Tamago is egg. Because I always thought it sounded like tomato almost, and I thought that was funny. Alright, so Ash and Co. are camping, and the egg is glowing and is about to hatch. They're all excited, and so is Team Rocket, who are hiding in the bushes.
There, in the bushes!
It was kind of ridiculous how much they talked about how they couldn't wait to see what was inside it. They had the Togepi egg for a lot longer before that thing hatched. It didn't even care that much until it was getting close to hatching time. And then, like, I wonder what's in it.
yeah, that's fair.
The next morning, the egg hatches, and it turns out that it is not a Gen 3 Pokemon like I thought it was going to be. It's just a Phanpy. I guess that's not fair. It's not just a Phanpy. Phanpy's adorable and cute and great, but it's not a Gen 3.
I thought it was going to be like a water Pokemon or something, too. It was just Phanpy.
Yep. So then Ash tries to put Phanpy in his Pokeball, but Phanpy keeps messing around. So he's going to feed the Pokemon, but then Team Rocket eggs show up and cook up an interesting intro.
Prepare for trouble from inside of a shell.
And make it double. It's starting to smell. And then at the end, Meowth pops out of his egg as well, with what is possibly an outstanding outro. I don't know if our outstanding outros own, like, if Meowth says something different, does it count? Or do they have to say their ending differently as well?
I think they have to say differently, because they're the ones doing the, like, motto, and he, yeah, pops in at the end.
Yeah, because he made a pun with extremely right. Okay, so we're not going to count that, though?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so they have to change theirs. His doesn't matter.
No. It's funny, but...
Sounds like a plan. Pikachu zaps them, but just then, Team Rocket sends a mech hand that grabs Phanpy, so the electricity travels down it and zaps Phanpy instead. Well, not instead, I guess, because Team Rocket still ends up blasting off again! Ding! But Phanpy was hurt and is now scared and runs away, and Pikachu feels guilty. Of course, this is all a little dumb since Phanpy is a ground type and should be immune to the shock.
I don't know.
The gang all go looking for Phanpy, and Brock is throwing out food, and then a Pokemon is in the bushes and he's sure it must be Phanpy. But when he pulls it out, we get a Psyduck sighting, as it's just Misty's Psyduck. She's so angry with him.
Of course she is.
While Ash and Pikachu keep searching, Ash is able to help Pikachu recognize it isn't his fault. Meanwhile, Phanpy gets lost and is hungry. It smells food and follows it to Team Rocket cooking toast. Phanpy eats all their toast, and Team Rocket plot to use Phanpy's immunity to electricity. Really? Now he's immune?
They actually said that?
Yeah, that's their whole inspiration for their suits and everything that's coming up.
Oh my gosh, what?
Phanpy likes Meowth's tail, and they think he wants to eat it like Snubbull. They even mentioned Snubbull, so some more continuity. There's been a lot of continuity in this particular season, and I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But then they realize Phanpy thinks it is another Phanpy, and so they have Meowth paint his back to make it look even more like a Phanpy, with the tail being the trunk.
Yeah.
And they use that to recruit Phanpy to their side. Then Jesse and James pop out in electric-proof suits. Jesse launches into a motto, but we get an irritating interruption when James apologizes and says they've already been down that road. With Meowth's tail, they trick Phanpy into attacking the gang, and Pikachu can't shock them. Team Rocket use Weezing to escape with Pikachu and Phanpy, and then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon's spiky fins can pierce its opponent's skin. Then Team Rocket is congratulating themselves and have a toast to trouble in a catching catchphrase. Then they don't share with Phanpy, who was still so happy and playful, and they lock the poor thing in the cage with Pikachu. Phanpy is sad after that. But Pikachu comes up with a plan, and the two knock their cage down the cliff, breaking it open, and they run off together. Team Rocket chase them down, and the gang sees the balloon, so they follow them. Pikachu and Phanpy are confronted by a river, and Pikachu convinces Phanpy to follow him, leaping across the rocks. The second jump fails, and they both start washing away, and eventually Ash has to jump in to save them, except he uses a rope a couple times to try when he could have just stayed on the shore and used bay leaf's vine whip like they've done 100 times before.
Yeah, he was not smart at all about this.
But in the end, they all make it back to shore alive, and this gave Ash a moment to show Phanpy he cares. Misty says she hopes that will be the end of this trouble, or of these troubles, and Jesse couldn't resist and starts her intro again.
Did someone say trouble? As in, prepare for trouble?
James gives another irritating interruption, stopping them from continuing the motto. Meowth tries the tail trick again, and Vampy just looks at them angrily. So, normal Pokemon battle ensues. Phanpy gets involved and knocks everyone back into the balloon, and then Pikachu zaps the balloon, and Team Rocket don't care because they're fine, because they're all electric-proof in their suits. But not their Pokemon, who are getting electrocuted, and also the balloon is not fine, and so it explodes, and Team Rocket is blasting off again!
Ding! Alright, who's that Pokemon? It's Seedra. Our tallies are an interesting intro, side exciting, two irritating interruptions, a catching catchphrase, and a gotta catch 'em all, because he hatches Fampy. Now let's rank it. I think it probably stays below a Corsola caper.
Yeah, I could see that.
Maybe right below, I don't know. I kind of thought it was fun. So at least below a Corsola caper and above Extreme Pokemon, I think.
I would definitely push it down below Nerves of Steelix.
That's what I was thinking, probably. Maybe right above Extreme Pokemon?
I think I'm good with that.
Okay.
Because, yeah, the Parent Trapped and stuff, whereas they weren't the best in that arc, they were still part of that arc, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So then that will make that 14 out of 21.
Now that we have finished all our episodes, let's do Pokemon Chronicles, The Legend of Thunder, Parts 1 through 3. Or Bakuto Monstuda Kurisutaru Raikō. Or Pocket Monsters Crystal Raikō. No exclamation points, they are failing me terribly.
Well, this isn't a normal episode, so...
That's fair. I wouldn't count it, but the last one broke the streak, so... Which is a little bit understandable with literally two words.
Alright, so... Right off the bat, we are treated to a 1v1 battle between someone with a Hitmonlee and a guy that looks like Gold from the manga, or even just like the male sprite for the second gen games, with the backwards hat and everything. He has a Typhlosion, so, just like Serenity Sola, Rosella, and Flame, he obviously chose Cyndaquil when he left on his Pokemon journey. After Gold, we are treated with narration that tells us his name is Jimmy.
We will be calling him Gold for the rest of this. Jimmy? Like, who names their kid Jimmy?
What's interesting is I think in... Like, I don't think that's the official name for the character either, because I think they have official names for the characters in the games, even though you can pick whatever you want. And I want to say the official English name is, like, Ethan or something.
Ethan?
Yeah.
Why are such basic names?
I don't know. So we learn his name is Jimmy, and this was another victory on his journey to be a great Pokemon trainer. He wanders through a world of all kinds of Pokemon, but there is one that many believe exists. A Pokemon that lives between the sky and the mountaintops. A legendary beast known as Raikō, the Legend of Thunder.
Whoa, Raikō's in this?
I know, surprise.
I'm shocked.
And with this appearance and the title of the quote-unquote movie, we move on to a Team Rocket plane coming in for a landing at a secret underground base. And it's not our normal Team Rocket gang, so we definitely have some Teaming Rocket in this movie. And we start off with this villain duo here, who are named Attila and Hun. So, and apparently keeping up with the male-female duos like Jesse and James and Butch and Cassidy. Also, splitting the name of a historical figure, like Jesse James and Butch Cassidy, now we have Attila the Hun. Not an Old West criminal this time, but still. And it's also nice that we have this semi-special movie thing, because we had the Entei movie, which wasn't a real Entei, I know, but it was still Entei. We've had a movie that was about Celebi, but also heavily featured Suicune, who's also just been featured throughout the season, and now we got Raikō!
Nice.
Because the only time we've seen Raikō is in Houndoom Special Delivery, and that was only just barely. Like, you saw glimpses of it through the bushes, and then it zapped up into the air.
It was so cool.
Oh, it was so cool! What's interesting about Attila and Hun and their names, it's really weird that they would be have those connected names so close when it's, according to the rocket scientist they talked to, Attila is a new partner. So they weren't partners before, so it was Hun and somebody else, and now it's Hun and Attila.
Oh, wow.
Maybe the other partner was Knee or something. Honey. I don't know. So the scientist has a device called the Miracle Crystal that can control electricity itself. Apparently, Attila and Hun are planning to capture something, and the crystal is the tool they need. The crystal will absorb any electricity that comes at it, and it attracts everything electrical to it, like Pokemon, and then it can use the electricity that it absorbs to attack. Back to Jimmy, he follows his Pokegear to a Pokemon Center. Then he runs into a friend from home, Marina, who is talking to another friend of theirs, Vincent. And Marina looks just like Crystal, or the female sprite from the Crystal game. However, I don't recognize Vincent's look. And we later learn that he's got one of the Pokemon too, so there are the three, they have the three starters together, and so Vincent should be have long red hair and be a punk, but apparently not.
He's kind of punk.
Not nearly the same way.
Okay, I guess not.
So anyway, there's a weird situation here where Marina talks to Vincent like they are a couple. Like she keeps calling him hun or something, like honey or sweetie or something. I don't remember. But then Vincent says she will be his girlfriend soon when he's talking to Jimmy, and he knows Jimmy also likes her. So then the rest of the movie seems to lean into the fact that Marina actually likes Jimmy, who won't admit his feelings. Like, we get little spots here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder why Marina was talking to Vincent like she was. Like, is she just kind of a jerk and leading him on, or trying to make Jimmy jealous, or is it just weird dubbing and the Japanese isn't so crazy?
I think it's a little bit weird dubbing.
I wouldn't be surprised. So Marina also has a mischievous floating around with her, and she is super into dancing and wants to be a big star. While they're chatting, we are treated to a view of water Pokemon out a window, enjoying a pool. And guess what Pokemon is out there?
Vaporeon?
Vaporeon! Another mark for evolution! Apparently, Marina is also big into celebrities such as Lance, who she calls Fabulance. Like, fabulous, but Lance. Then these two decide to have a battle, and it is a 2v2 battle. Marina starts with Pink, the Jigglypuff, and Jimmy chooses Beedrill. Then she brings out Croconaw, so we know she chose Totodile. And Jimmy brings out Typhlosion, and he might have even won, despite being, you know, a type disadvantage. But a thunderstorm rolls in, and lightning strikes nearby, interrupting the whole thing. Their Pokemon run toward the commotion, and so Jimmy and Marina follow. Attila and Hun are using the crystal, which caused the storm and brought in a lot of electric Pokemon. Supposedly, the legend of Raikou is that it comes when Pokemon are in trouble as well, so that's part of Team Rocket's plan. Jimmy and Marina aren't happy to see what is going on, and they want to help. But then Raikou appears. Throughout the movie, I recognized Attila's voice, and so I looked into it. And it turns out that in the 2003 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, he voiced Casey Jones. And in that cartoon, there is a character called Hun, and in other parts of the TMNT universe, like the IDW comics, Hun is Casey Jones' father. So I thought that was all kind of interesting, weird connection.
It's all connected.
So after saving the Pokemon, Raikou tries to battle Team Rocket, but the crystal proves to be its undoing and gets beat up. Jimmy runs in to help with Typhlosion against Team Rocket's Skarmory and Steelix. The battle doesn't end well, but then Marina rushes in with Mischievous and Jimmy tosses in Beedrill. Team Rocket retreats and Raikou has been saved this time. Jimmy tries to help Raikou, but he gets blasted for his efforts. Jimmy earns a little trust, maybe, and Raikou collapses. Back at the Pokemon Center, Marina is talking with Professor Elm, and he warns them that Raikou needs to be set free right away after it heals because captivity isn't going to go well with it. And then, Eucene shows up to see Raikou. Well, he looked a lot like Eucene, but they all called him Eugene.
What the heck?
Yeah, I don't know what they're... I don't know what's going on here with their naming, but it is Eugene.
Yeah, it's Eugene. He's obsessed with the legendaries and everything. Suicune. He's obsessed with Suicune and everything, so it's definitely Eugene.
Oh, yeah. And Marina thinks that Eugene is really cute, partly because of his cape, which is what she likes about, one of the things she likes about Fabulance as well.
Fabulance.
There is also another character named Kudo. Not sure who he is or who he's supposed to be or anything. But they named him, and like almost like he was somebody that we should care about. But there really is nothing about this movie that makes us care about him. He does very little. They tell him to stay with people at one point, and so he does.
Good job, Kudo.
Right. Kudos, Kudo. For years, many have tried to capture Raikou, to control it, and the thunder and lightning it controls. So it doesn't trust humans. When Raikou wakes up, it blasts apart the place and breaks out a wall, escaping back into the wild. A storm is approaching again, and they are the strange clouds just like before. Team Rocket is trying their whole storm thing again. Yuxing goes with the kids to help this time. I think he has them get in his car or something, doesn't he? Or is that later?
Sounds right. I'm guessing it's now.
Team Rocket battles Raikou, and the crystal continues to absorb Raikou's blasts and firing them back. The kids show up and battle and are almost crushed by a rock when they are rescued by Vincent and Meganium. Yuxing starts his running gag of trying to save people by throwing in a Pokemon and getting stopped or interrupted before he can do it. Like, this happens a few times. Team Rocket managed to steal Raikou, and Marina ended up aboard their flying machine as well. So Marina finds a way to short out the cargo door while they're high up in the sky, and it's too high for Marina to escape, but she sets Raikou free. Jimmy has Vincent call Marina using his Pokegear, because there was a whole thing about Jimmy not getting Marina's number because he was being weird about it, but Vincent has it, obviously. The call is cut short, but Yuxing can trace the signal, and it will help them find Team Rocket. Once again, Team Rocket uses the crystal to create a storm. Yuxing and the boys arrive to save the day while Marina is tied up. Then Raikou shows up again, too, attacking the crystal and charging it up. Raikou attacks Team Rocket, their Pokemon, and their machines. The crystal is still working now that it has absorbed so much energy that breaking the machines didn't stop it.
It's now looking good.
And so the crystal sucks Raikou into it, into the cage area that holds the crystal anyway. And all his energy is being absorbed. So all that's left is to break open the field around Raikou, grab him, and get out. And if they fail, they die too. Typhlosion volunteers, and Meganium and Misdreavus also rush in to help. Finally, Yuxing gets his Pokemon out to help, and it's Alakazam! Team Rocket send in their Pokemon to try and stop the heroes, which includes Attila tossing out a Muk now. Hun gets a new plan and sends Steelix to attack the humans to distract the heroes' Pokemon. It doesn't work, so they have the rest send attacks at the Pokemon, and Steelix comes for Jimmy. So Steelix is gonna, like, has Jimmy cornered on a cliff, and so it doesn't look like there's any escape for him, but he just uses his Beedrill to escape, and Steelix falls into the river below.
Ooh. He probably doesn't like water, even though he's steel.
Right. Well, he's not just steel, I don't think.
Gets in between all the rocks.
Typhlosion and Meganium are almost through the field, but Steelix returns and goes to attack them. The three young trainers get in the way and will probably be killed by Steelix just to stop it from getting Raikou and the other Pokemon. Raikou sees this and fights back as well, and the crystal cracks. Attila and Hun flee before the crystal explodes, and Raikou, free, blasts the crystal apart for good. The kids bid farewell to Raikou, and the sun breaks through the clouds. Now, a little bit of trivia about this whole thing. So apparently this miniseries special is one of the most heavily edited dubs that we have. They changed a lot when they dubbed it.
Oh.
There's lots of cuts to scenes and stuff like that, but the two most interesting changes, I think, are there was a flashback scene where the three main characters get their Pokemon, and we don't see that scene at all. That's completely cut from this version.
Aw, that right? would have been interesting.
I agree. And then Hun, so Attila's the big guy with Casey Jones' voice, and Hun was the girl, right?
I thought Hun should be they should switch names.
Well, Hun is supposed to be a male, but they dubbed it with a female actress. They didn't have to change the art either. I was watching it, and I'm like, oh yeah, that could be a dude. We just automatically put, see female because female voice. But, anime characters that are, especially when they're, skinnier or whatever, they can usually pass either way.
Interesting.
Yep. And I don't know why they chose that, except maybe to keep the whole theme of, Jesse James, Butch Cassidy, the male-female partner thing.
Possibly.
But yeah, apparently they were both supposed to be guys this time. And yeah, like we've mentioned already, the character names are a mess. Like, Eugene's supposed to be Eugene, but even the kids, they're all supposed to have different names too, like Vincent and Jimmy and all that stuff. They have different names in other versions of those characters and like games and stuff, wherever they might show up. But that's the special.
Well, now that we've concluded our special, their tallies are Teaming Rocket 1, Scientist and His Assistants, plus Attila and Hun, and an Eeveelution, Vaporeon, out the window in the pool.
Yep.
Are we ranking it?
No, it's not a normal episode.
That's what I was thinking.
Just like we didn't rate, like, rank Mewtwo Returns or whatever.
That's fair.
And, like, the movies, they don't get ranked into the anime episodes. They have their own system.
Yeah. Now, let's pick our Pokemon. So, each pick a Pokemon who we think was featured well or used a lot in these episodes.
Ooh, there's a couple of good ones.
Are we including the special?
I don't know. I guess it's up to you.
I feel like probably not, since we didn't rank it with the rest of the episodes.
Sounds good. I think I have my answer.
1, 2, 3.
Espeon.
Is it Don Fan?
Fampi?
Yeah, that one. Oh, Espeon not included was that one.
Yeah, I was torn between Espeon and Bulbasaur.
Now that we've finished with our episodes, let's go ahead and move on to our manga chapter. Adventure 143, Irked, Igglybuff, and Curmudgeonly Cleffa.
Alright, so we start off with DJ Mary and a crew and the director of the Pokemon Association all traveling in cold temperatures. DJ Mary is recording a show from the road. Down in a gorge, Whitney and her Miltank are climbing down to reach the ice gym that was built in this hard-to-get-to location for some reason. They even mention that the leader, Price, is rarely seen and is hard to get a hold of as he doesn't even have a phone. Apparently, they started this trek to visit all the gyms and their leaders since Suicune has been challenging gym leaders. DJ Mary and Pokemon Association guy think Price might be the next target, and Whitney thinks it will be her. Inside, Whitney ends up slipping around on the ice floor, and then the elderly Price arrives in a wheelchair. He takes them to an area of ice sculptures, and there is one of Suicune, and Whitney claims Price had to make that since Suicune would never come to him.
Whitney was kind of rude during the whole thing.
Well, she wasn't really great in the other chapter she was in either. Not that, I mean, Gold kind of asked for some of the flack, but, like, she wasn't great. And she's not great in the game, crying over our victory.
Just not the best gym leader.
Then, suddenly, Suicune is there. The director says that the ice sculpture was probably Suicune just frozen. Whitney then steps in and sends in Igglybuff and Cleffa to Sweet Kiss before sending Miltank to roll out. Whitney is sure she won, but when Price comes back, we see that Miltank is down and Suicune is standing. The director tells Whitney to let Price handle it, and she wonders what that old geezer could do. To be continued.
Now that we've finished with our episodes and manga, let's go to Pokemon cards.
Alright, so this week I am opening Scarlet and Violet Stellar Crown with a Terastalized Lapras on it.
I'm opening Scarlet and Violet Prismatic Evolutions.
Final pack.
Yes, with an Eevee and Sylveon on it.
Alright, I have Fido, Psychic type. The yeast in Fido's breath is useful for cooking, so this Pokemon has been protected by people since long ago. Applin, Grass type. Applin lives inside an apple. When an Applin is separated from its apple, its body loses moisture, and the Pokemon grows weak.
Oh.
Crabrawler, fighting type. If it loses its pincers, they'll quickly regrow. The pincers are popular ingredients in Paella since their shells produced a tasty soup stock.
Oh, interesting.
That's a cute little Wooloo. Yes, Wooloo is my next one. Colorless. And it's just happily walking through flowers and stuff that are floating around in the night sky.
It's super cute.
Its curly fleece is such an effective cushion that this Pokemon could fall off a cliff and stand right back up at the bottom, unharmed.
Oh, it just like bounced a little on him. Boop. I'm better.
Eldegoss evolves from Gossifleur, which is the new Pokemon popping out all over the place lately. Grass type. The seeds attached to its cotton fluff are full of nutrients. It spreads them on the wind so the plants and other Pokemon can benefit from them. Salazzle, fire type, evolves from Salandit. When two Salazzle meet, they will use their pheromone gas to fight over the males in each other's group. Hoo-hoo! Frogadier, water type. Ooh. It can throw bubble-covered pebbles with precise control, hitting empty cans up to 100 feet away. Hoo-hoo! Raging Bolt, dragon type, ancient. Raging Bolt must be the Paldean Paradox form of Raikou, also timely for this episode. It is said to incinerate everything around it with lightning launched from its fur. Very little is known about this creature.
It's electric and fighting. Not surprised about the electric part. The fighting.
Oh, and reverse holo, if I didn't say. And it's definitely a rare card. My other reverse holo is Froakie, water type. It secretes flexible bubbles from its chest and back. The bubbles reduce the damage it would otherwise take when attacked. Rosella's gonna be one in this card. Cinderace EX Terra card, fire type. Double star, secret rare stuff going on here.
I want that card.
And it actually has a move that uses fire, fighting, and dark. Has the white background and lots of cool sparkles and whatnot. It's very cool looking.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a basic psychic type energy.
Wow.
I'm okay with my pack.
I guess so. All right, my first Pokemon is Bronzor, steel. They are found in ancient tombs. The pattern on their backs are said to be imbued with mysterious power. Furfrou, colorless. Ability, fur coat. This Pokemon takes 20 less damage from attacks after applying weakness and resistance. There was an era when aristocrats would compete to see who could trim their Furfrou's fur in the most exquisite style. Larvitar, fighting. It is born deep underground. It can't emerge until it has entirely consumed the soil around it. Oh my. Buneary, colorless. If both of Buneary's ears are rolled up, something is wrong with its body or mind. It's a sure sign the Pokemon is in need of care. Item, trainer card, glass trumpet. I think we've already got this, right?
Sounds familiar.
Hawlucha, colorless. Hawlucha live quietly without flocking together. They fight constantly with their natural enemies, noisy groups of primate. Supporter trainer, explorer's guidance, ancient. Look at the top 6 cards of your deck and put 2 of them into your hand. Discard the other cards. Reverse holo with like a little rainbow bottom. It's rare. Dunsparce evolves from Dunsparce, colorless. Runaway draw. Once during your turn, you may draw 3 cards. If you drew any cards in this way, shuffle this Pokemon and all attached cards into your deck. This Pokemon uses its hard tail to make its nest by boring holes into bedrock deep underground. The nests can reach lengths of over 6 miles. Miltank. This one has like stars and the other one had like a Pokeball on the for pattern. Colorless. Miltank produces highly nutritious milk, so it's been supporting the lives of people and other Pokemon since ancient times. Ooh. My rare card is Jolteon. Evolves from Eevee. Electric. It concentrates the weak electric charges emitted by its cells and launches wicked lightning bolts. Then a dark energy. Okay, that concludes our episode for today. Routes Through Pokemon is a Hunter Field Institute production. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and other podcasting platforms. And we're also on YouTube at the Hunter Field Institute channel. So please like, subscribe, rate, and review. And if you want to reach out, you can email us at hunterfieldmanor@gmail.com. You can also find our latest tallies and rankings on our Facebook page, Routes Through Pokemon. You can also connect with Shaylock on X at Hunterfield Inns and Instagram at kinetic_card. Next week, we will be covering 8 episodes of the anime and another chapter of the manga, and that will bring us to the ice gym for Ash, which means the episode after that, Shaylock and I are back to the video games. Games.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you on the next route.
Bye-bye. Sayonara. Part 40. Gloomy Weather. In the underground tunnel, Violet continued to watch an uninteresting ceiling as she heard continued shouts and noise indicating the Pokemon battle. Muffled sounds and no visuals made it sort of pointless, and yet it caught her attention and she remained. Part of it might have been the fact that she was tired and did not feel like hobbling along anymore at that moment. Then, to the girl's surprise, something interesting did happen. First, she wasn't sure she had heard the crackling and crumbling sound, but when the ceiling started to chip and drop small bits of debris, she knew the sounds were real. Just a few tiny roots poked out where the crack had appeared, and it seemed that whatever Pokemon was up there must be trying to absorb nutrients from the ground. Violet started flipping through pages of Pokemon research in her mind. It seemed likely that the Pokemon in question was a grass type. Vines and things used for battling or binding up an opponent were things she had read about. And absorbing energy from other Pokemon could happen. But she didn't remember anything about getting energy from the ground itself. Another minute, and then the battle went quiet. A few moments after that, and the roots suddenly vanished back up to wherever they had come from. Violet moved to stand directly under the spot to see if she could get a better vantage point. But nothing was gained except some dust in her eye when something above caused the ground to vibrate a little. Probably someone jumping up and down in victory. Realizing the battle was over, and remembering that she could still be in danger, Violet cleaned out her eyes as best she could and started back down the tunnel to the other side. At the top of the steps, a trainer approached Violet and asked her if she had a male Nidoran.
No, sorry, I don't have any kind of Nidoran.
The trainer shrugged and headed into the tunnel and mumbled something about maybe someone in Cerulean wanted to trade. Violet's thoughts were so occupied with the rocket people who kept coming after her, so her mind immediately went to how helpful that trainer could be. Her pursuers could possibly be slowed down if they started coming through the tunnel to find her. Heading outside, Violet found that the day was no longer very nice. The sky was gray, and she got the feeling it might rain. There was even a strong, chilly breeze coming against her from the south. Violet didn't want to get stuck out there as the weather got worse, and so she tried to move faster along the path to get to the city before any rain arrived. She didn't make it. As Violet was going along, she tried to take a shortcut through some grass, but the ground there was a lot more uneven, and it made traveling with her injured ankle a lot harder. Before long, she took a spill, shouting as she went down. A moment after hitting the dirt, there was a flash of light. Rolling over, Violet groaned as she looked at the sky. She waited for the boom of thunder and more flashes of lightning to herald the rain. But that didn't happen. There was no boom, and there was no more lightning. She was pretty sure she felt a drop of rain hit her cheek, though.
One flash of thunderless lightning? That doesn't seem right. I thought there was always thunder with lightning.
Getting back to her feet, the girl trudged her way back onto the path, realizing the shortcuts weren't going to be so short. As she did, a funny sensation came over her, and she couldn't place what it was. Shivering due to the odd sense as much as to the chill in the air, Violet tried to speed up. After a few feet, she slowed down and started to examine the area around her. She had started to recognize the sensation and was pretty sure she was being watched.
Hello? Who's out there?
Her only response was two more drops from the sky, one hitting her wrist and the other connected with the top of her head. Slowly, she lowered a hand to her belt and grabbed a Pokeball, all while still trying to find the source of her discomfort. Having a Pokemon at her side would make her feel a lot better. And what better Pokemon to have in the rain than...
Mizu, come on out!
The Pokeball opened, and V emerged. The girl frowned, thinking she had grabbed the wrong ball. Then she realized what happened. Mizu wasn't with her. The horsey had been poisoned, and so Violet had left her partner with the Pokemon Center nurse while she went to her room to rest. But then she had to escape the Rocket Thugs and...
Oh no, 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 no! Mizu!
V, the pale-furred Eevee, looked up at Violet, confused, as if to say, I'm not Mizu! But then the Pokemon's ear twitched, and it immediately turned around and stared off into the grass toward a line of trees. His sudden alertness made Violet even more uneasy.
What? What's out there?
A low growl was V's only response before lunging into the tall grass. To be continued.